Welcome, everyone, to You're Gonna Need a Bigger Bottle.
Welcome!
It's a podcast about movies and wine for people who don't know shit about one or both. I'm Jamie. I'm the wine guy.
I am Scott. I am your movie guy, and we are here to help you, dear audience. Each episode, we pair a movie that I love with a wine that he loves.
We tell you why we like them, how they're made, and why they work. Hopefully, we find a pairing that works. Usually, we don't.
Now, we are taking a little bit of a break right now, catching our breath while we record ahead for our next miniseries. But right now, the day that this episode drops, the best movie of 2022 so far, Everything Everywhere All at Once, written and directed by Daniels, Kwan, and Scheinert, collectively known as The Daniels, is still playing in theaters across the U.S., which means it's probably playing near you. And not just in those fancy highfalutin art house theaters, it's playing in the big old Regal and AMC multiplexes, too. It's a hyperkinetic kung fu sci-fi existential comedy across the multiverse starring Michelle Yeoh and Ki-Hui Kwan, also known as Short Round from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. He's back and he's amazing
in
his
50s.
We've seen it. We love it. We think you'll love it and you should go see it. Plus, this very weekend, the weekend that you're hopefully listening to this episode, A24, the distributor, is putting the movie back on select IMAX screens nationwide. Which sounds like a bonkers way to see that movie.
That is terrifying.
Usually movies that cost, you know, the catering budget of an Avengers film don't play on IMAX screens.
No.
Yeah. This is not promoted content. A24 doesn't know that we exist, let alone doesn't want to pay us anything. Just a public service announcement from Jamie and I to you for free because the movie is good. And when movies are good, it's a good thing for people, and good people should go see good movies in good theaters, and then maybe the people who make movies will say, oh, what if we made more good things, and then people will go and see them, and then that will be good.
That's the idea, but late-stage capitalism being what it is, I don't have a lot of faith.
Well, yeah, because the whole thing is that, you know, next weekend, there's another multiverse movie that's coming out that is very likely to gobble up all of the screens, or at least many of them, that this movie is currently playing on. So this could be your last chance to see it theatrically. Go see it. Go see it. Highest possible recommendation.
In the meantime, though, since we know you devoted listeners couldn't go a week without hearing our nasal, obnoxious voices in your ears, please.
That was for me. I'm particularly nasal. I'm very sick. I'm sorry.
He sounds fine, guys. Send Scott a DM and tell him that he sounds fine.
Yeah.
This week, we're flashing back to one of our earliest episodes when we talked about the Daniels' first feature, Swiss Army Man, Also Rules.
Also Rules.
Which I paired with Castello di Verduno, Pella Verga, Also Rules. Swiss Army Man is currently available streaming via Showtime and on VOD.
You should watch it. But anyway, now we will turn it over to Past Scott and Past Jamie. This was recorded all the way back in December of 2020. This was back when I knew even less about wine than I do now, and back when Jamie did not yet know that you need to actually speak into the microphone when recording the episode. So everyone, please attempt to enjoy some really brutal audio production on that one. Enjoy!
Enjoy.
Well, also, I'm asking you questions, like, as a quote-unquote broadcaster. Like, I'm asking you questions to make the show better, not just because
I understand, but I'm going to continue to make fun of you as though you're an idiot.
That's fine, but I am asking a lot of questions to benefit the show. I don't want you to think that the questions that I'm asking are due to ignorance or to interest. I'm just trying to make the show better.
You are both ignorant and interested. I know you are.
But that's not why I'm asking the questions. I want to be clear.
Okay. Your objections to my assessment are noted.
Thank you kindly.
So why don't, Scotty, you tell us what the movie is?
Sure.
And what was the prompt you gave me for the pairing?
For today's podcast, we, Jamie and I, have both watched the 2016 film Swiss Army Man. I just get the gigs talking about this movie. In Swiss Army Man, Paul Dano plays Hank, who is stranded on a deserted island after an unseen shipwreck. Hank is ready to commit suicide when a corpse, played by Daniel Radcliffe, washes up on shore, propelled by its own flatulence. Moments later, Hank is riding the corpse like a jet ski back to the mainland, where the corpse, who Hank soon names Manny, with his rigor mortis multi-tool of a body, becomes Hank's only means of survival and his new best friend as they travel together back to civilization.
I've got to stop you really quickly to just make sure that everyone knows that Hank does not name him Manny. He says
He introduces himself. That's his first words, right?
His first word is Manny. before he can like produce air himself, which is never really explained how that transition is done, but
it's visualized.
Gradually comes back to life due to the power of love and friendship. Friendship is magic.
Friendship is magic.
Cool. So what were the words that you gave me to pair this movie to? Because I had not seen it.
So in my effort to give Jamie something to work with here to make his intellectual leap of a wine pairing, I said that Swiss Army Man was sweet, said it was grotesque, said it was irreverent. Did I give you anything else? I feel like I came up with some more stuff off the cuff in the recording.
I believe sweet, grotesque, and irreverent were the...
Sweet, grotesque, and irreverent.
You may have said one or two more things, but I was drunk by that point.
As was I. What wine do we have that is sweet, grotesque, and irreverent, Jamie?
This wine is an always favorite of mine. It is by a producer called Castello di Verduno, coming from the town of Verduno in Piedmont, Italy. It is a Pellaverga, which is a grape that I'm going to guess most of you don't know about. Pellaverga is, well, we'll get into what Pellaverga is, but this is the 2019 bottling, and they call this wine Bassadone.
Pellaverga is not the grape?
Pellaverga is the grape. You see... Right on the label, right under Bassadone, it says da uve Pellaverga Piccolo.
Correct.
And that means from the Pellaverga Piccolo grape.
Huh.
Uva means grape. This grape is really only grown in this area of Piedmont. Outside of Verduno, there's another, what they call clone or variant of Pellaverga that's called Pellaverga Grosso, which has kind of a similar-ish profile, but... this one is widely considered to be the best.
Hmm.
So let's talk about this here wine.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
With your takes, because your wife was texting me last night with her takes.
Yeah, I don't approve of that, by the way. For any of the listening audience at home who is not familiar with Jamie, myself, or my wife, to be clear, I am in no way concerned that you're texting her for maybe the usual reasons that a man might say, I don't approve of you texting my wife. It's like the two of you uniting together is usually a bad sign for me. That's like,
yep.
It's the same way with Lerman.
For the record, I very much in support of that.
Yeah. Well, my thoughts upon consumption, I had a glass last night while I was watching Swiss Army Man, except that I got so sucked into the damn movie that I forgot to drink the wine.
I don't understand.
I know.
It's like you're saying words in English, but like I'm not getting it.
Well, let me give you this one. This glass that I have right now is from the same bottle that I opened and did not finish last night.
All right, so we're going to need to work on your enunciation because you're saying things that I'm just not getting it.
So my initial thoughts upon pouring a glass last night, I detected pepper on the nose. I got quite a bit of pepper on the nose.
What kind of pepper? You getting like red bell pepper, green bell pepper?
No, like
chili pepper, black pepper,
black
white
pepper,
pink peppercorn, the Sichuan pink peppercorn.
All right, shut up. Stop showing off. I didn't know there were that many kinds of peppers.
There are so many kinds of peppers.
Well, on the nose, I was thinking just black pepper, but now that you suggest that there are others. No, I would still say black pepper. The smell of cherries. I got cherries on the nose.
What kind of cherry?
I don't know. Cherry. My wife said maraschino cherries last night. I don't have that discerning of a cherry palate. I got cherries. Give me a break.
Red cherry,
okay?
Black cherry, Bing cherry, dried cherry.
Sure. Cherries. Do cherries smell different? Do they not all smell the same?
Oh my God. A horde of bakers is currently on their way to your house to murder you.
As long as it's not the ones from the bakery around the corner from my house, who I love very much and would be very sad if I wasn't allowed there anymore. It was quite a bit different when I had a little sip in the beginning than when I came back to it after forgetting to drink any of it for the 90 minutes of this movie. I got like a ton of cranberry tartness after the movie, but beforehand, the wine felt much sweeter to me. And then after my glass basically sat unattended for a good 90 minutes, suddenly it was like all cranberry hitting me. And this is like where the fruitiness, I feel like cranberry, the fruit flavors are giving me license to really abuse you verbally. This wine, follow this metaphor here.
Yeah.
It's from concentrate. You hear what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
It's a little bit watery. Like, it's not watered down, but there is like, all the other wines that we've done for the show so far have been much stronger. And it doesn't, I mean, I guess watered down is all I can think of, but that was the thing that came to me. This is like cranberry juice from concentrate.
My question for you is, do you like it or not?
I'm not crazy about it. I do like it. I think I liked it more last night. It is leaving me with a little bit of the dry mouth. What do you call it?
It's tannin.
Tannin.
It's drying me out.
Yes, the tannins are drying me out. The nose is delightful, and it's sweet, but it's those tannins and that tartness that's kind of putting me off a little bit.
So, once again, we're failing to understand what sweet is. This wine is not sweet.
But there's hints of it. I was getting the sweetness in the beginning when I first opened the bottle. I detected sweetness.
Any sugar? Do you detect sugar on your palate when you taste this wine? I'm just going to preempt you and tell you that you don't, because there is almost no residual sugar in this wine.
Okay. Okay.
And that's, I'm just here trying to help you get a vocabulary for this stuff. Wow. And you're shaking your head like
that's what you're here for. That's what we're doing. I didn't realize that's what this was.
So wine's totally dry, but I will agree with you that a lot of the flavor notes and aroma notes are reticent of sweet things, like Ocean Spray cranberry juice. And like your wife rightly pointed out, this kind of like almond paste marzipan thing that I don't remember getting in previous vintages of this wine. This, by the way, is my first experience with the 2019. It's a little bit different. What I remember of this wine, of like all of the vintages that I've interacted with over the last like decade, is that this is roses and cranberries. This wine leans a little bit more bitter. There's like a grapefruit pith kind of thing going on. There's like an almond paste kind of thing. And there's still a florality, but it's like dried roses as opposed to fresh roses. And yeah, I'd say that there's a little bit of an Ocean Spray kind of thing going on, where what I'm used to from this wine is like fresh, crunchy cranberries, like the unprocessed, like just the fruit. So it's interesting to see that kind of variation year to year. And I drank a bunch of the 2018 last year. Yeah, it was fun talking to your wife about her takes, because I hadn't tasted it when she texted me. She's like, I'm getting grapefruit and almond. I'm like, are you having a stroke? Because I've never detected those things. I didn't actually ask her if she was having a stroke, but I did think it.
I mean, clearly, well, okay, so you did think it. So you were so concerned that she had a stroke that you didn't feel like, I don't know, doing anything, stepping in.
No, I opened.
Alerting her husband who was in the fucking house.
I opened the wine and double checked her. And then confirmed that the wine tastes like that.
Aha! So last night, when she was texting you about almond paste and fucking grapefruit pith, you did open the wine.
I did.
Did you drink the entire bottle?
No. I drank a little over a glass.
Aha! Right, I have a lot of questions here.
Yeah.
What in the shit in this wine am I supposed to be tasting that tastes like almonds? We're going to set aside the fact that I don't know what almond paste tastes like. What is this almond flavor? Where am I getting that? Describe it to me in words.
Okay. So, because you're asking where you get it, and my response is in the fucking glass, you nincompoop.
All right. Explain to me what it tastes like so I can discern it while the wine is in my mouth.
All right.
Don't just tell me, well, do you taste that thing that tastes like almonds? Because that's the almond.
No. It's so almonds themselves, like raw almonds, have their own particular aroma. When you process them and sweeten them and make them into like an extract or a paste, there's this like high-toned, almost floral thing that goes along with it. You've had marzipan before, right?
I've had marzipan.
So that's really the essence of the flavor. Marzipan is made using almond paste. That sort of like top end, almost like lemon and like a honeysuckle kind of thing. Almond paste is a really singular aroma.
I think there's a tube of it in my fridge. I'm going to go find some later. And after I've consumed half of it, I'll ring you up.
And like, if it's in the fridge, put it in like a bowl and let it warm up for like an hour or so. So that, because warm things volatilize their aroma compounds much more readily. So you'll be able to smell it, is my point.
Now, there is a possible podcast title. Warm things volatilize their aromas more readily. It rolls off the tongue. It sounds pretentious. It doesn't mean anything to anyone.
It means something to a lot of people, first of all. But second of all, yeah, it's super easy to remember.
Yeah.
We are sure to be on the tip of every person's tongue.
Well, especially with a word like volatilize, which cannot possibly be a real word.
It is absolutely a real word.
Volatilize.
You're now looking it up on...
God damn it.
Yeah.
To cause a substance to evaporate or disperse in vapor. All right. I mean, we have vaporize, which is a perfectly good word, but all right, I guess we need another word that means the same thing. My last question to you is, this is about you saying that you detected grapefruit pith.
Yes.
Pith in this wine. So one, why would anyone eat grapefruit pith? And two, why does anyone eat grapefruit? Because it's disgusting and nasty.
Okay, so I'm going to take those in reverse.
Okay.
First, grapefruit is delicious and you're stupid.
Okay, sure.
Second, people eat grapefruit pith mostly by accident.
Because when they're scooping.
Yeah, when you're peeling it or when you're scooping, you just accidentally get some pith. It's the bitter white part. Your wife said pith, but I would say it's more the grapefruit oil that lives on the skin of the grapefruit.
So like the zest?
Yeah. So if you peel a grapefruit and then squeeze that peel, you'll express a bunch of the oil and that'll be like really prominent sort of in the air. And that aroma is what I get in this wine.
Grapefruit is disgusting. I know half a grapefruit is a very healthy breakfast, but one, doesn't seem that filling. And two, I gotta dump so much sugar on it to make it palatable that makes me wonder how it's even healthy in the first place.
It's not if you dump a lot of sugar on it, but well, grapefruit then it's not palatable. Delicious. If you squeeze yourself some fresh grapefruit juice and then pour a shot of gin in it, that's a Greyhound and it's delicious.
See, now we're talking. Now that's something I'm interested in. And I don't even like gin, but gin with grapefruit sounds way better than grapefruit with grapefruit.
Yeah, super duper yummy. The thing that I find interesting about this wine is that it can be at once this sort of refreshing beverage, while, as you rightly pointed out, it is quite tannic. And by the look of it, you wouldn't expect it. It's super light in your glass. And the aromas are so lifted and floral and citrus toned and red fruited, as opposed to something that's more earthy and blueberries and blackberries, which you might expect this level of tannin from. This one sort of creeps up on you.
The color and the nose, I thought, misrepresented what it tasted like, ultimately. Because it looks like it's so much light passes through it. It's not that dark.
Yeah.
And the nose is, like, there's all these great, I would say sugary. Apparently, it's not sweet. But there's all these great scents and fruit flavors. And then you drink it, and it's just like a mouthful of tannins and butts. I don't know. Maybe I don't like this wine. I like the smell of it.
Tannins and butts, huh?
Tannins and butts. Podcast name.
That's a good podcast name.
That would be if we were pairing wines with, I don't know, pornography or something. Tannins and butts.
We could do Debbie Does Dallas one episode. That would be a fun one-off.
I don't want to talk about porn with you. I certainly don't want to talk about porn, you know, like in a recording on the internet. But I really don't want to, like, you know, we're texting and, all right, I poured my wine. Jamie, are you ready? Let's watch Debbie Does Dallas synchronized from miles away. Like, absolutely not.
Yeah. Moving right along.
Yeah, let's.
But I think it's stimulating in that way. You get this high acidity, you get this tannin. It's sort of bracing. It's, I think, super yummy. Clearly, you are much less enthusiastic about it than I am.
I mean, look, I drank half a bottle last night. I'm going to finish the rest of the bottle now. It's not revolting or unpleasant. It's just, it's a little surprising. That's all.
Yeah. I absolutely love it. Pella Verga is sort of a sommelier darling. We love Piedmont and all of us kind of want to be drinking Barolo and Barbaresco all the time, but that shit's very expensive and not good until it's like 20 years old.
And what is this bottle cost a person?
This is like $21. I think it was $21.99 at Crush Wine Co. It's affordable. It can be shipped anywhere in the U.S. It's relatively small production. It comes from the town of Verduno, the eponymous Verduno from its name, Castello di Verduno. That is a town in Piedmont in Italy. So we're talking northwest Italy. This is a town that's within the Barolo area. And if you've heard of or tasted Barolo, it's one of the big famous noble wines of the region. It's super duper ageable. It's made from the Nebbiolo grape. And this producer makes a bunch of that. They also make a tiny bit of Pellaverga. And so yeah, Castello di Verduno. They make a bunch of great Barolo and Barbaresco. They make this Pellaverga. They do some cool Barberas. This wine is made in entirely stainless steel, no oak. It's just made to be sort of fresh and drunk early. Although I've never encountered an older Pellaverga. I'd be very interested to try it after some time.
We would not age this at all then. You just pop it open, give it a drink.
I think that it could age. I've never encountered it aged.
When somebody pops a bottle open and they're getting ready to have a drink, do they decant? Do they let it aerate? Give it just a splish and a splash? What kind of glass do we put it in? Is it served chilled? Mine was served chilled last night. I don't know if that offends your delicate sensibilities.
I think this is easily chillable. You're going to get more, as we mentioned earlier, the warmer a substance is, the more aroma compounds are volatilized. But I like chilling red sometimes, and especially a wine like this that's so sort of light and easy. This chilled, I think, would be delightful.
It was last night when it was chilled. Maybe coming to room temperature is where all that nasty tannic cranberry ass that I was tasting came from.
It's possible that you just...
Maybe the appropriate presentation is chilled.
I think the appropriate presentation is how you like it. I think that you can decant it if you want it decanted. It'll definitely benefit from some air, but it's not necessary in the way that it is for certain wines. And as for the vessel, I would put it into a wine glass.
All right. So this jelly jar that I've got here is not the appropriate canvas for this wine, you're saying?
He's making jokes, but I know y'all can't see him, but I can see his
wine glass. It's a jelly jar.
It's an all-purpose.
It's a jelly jar. It's a Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, commemorative Schmuckers jelly jar. Everybody knows I have the whole Episode II series. Jamie and I went all in on Attack of the Clones back in 2002. All right, that's all made up. But it is true that Jamie saw that movie in theaters like four times.
I did not see that movie in theaters four times.
You saw it in theaters several times because the first time I saw it, we blew off school for a day.
Yeah, that I remember.
And we went together and you had already seen it two, if not three times, and you slept through most of the movie, which is the appropriate response to that film.
Yeah, that movie sucked.
It's so
boring. I was
boring.
An insufferable type of nerd around that time, too. So it does scan that I would have seen it that many times.
Jamie, you're still an insufferable nerd.
But it's different now.
Right. You just changed interests, but you're just a nerd about different stuff, but you're just as insufferable as you were back then. You were just as highfalutin and pretentious and bullshitty when you would talk about JRPGs and Star Wars as you are now talking about fucking Pinot Grigio.
That's not true, because now I know what the fuck I'm talking about. So I think we've wrapped up our discussion of this wine.
I think we have, which is perfect timing because I'm right.
Well, actually, hold on. We forgot everyone's favorite segment.
Oh, well, there's a problem with everyone's favorite segment.
There's a problem because there's no fucking Pellaverga notes on Wine Folly.
Well, tragically for the listener this week, the podcast game that's sweeping the nation, Jamie tries to outguess the five principal flavor profile notes of a wine against winefolly.com. is unplayable this week.
And by the way, this game, not sweeping the nation, nor is it a game where I attempt to guess what Wine Folly is saying.
Well, no wonder you're losing every time.
Where I say what the flavor notes actually are, and then we compare that with what Wine Folly has to say. And it's a stupid game anyway. Swiss Army Man, Scotty Too Hottie, give us some context on this. Before we tear it apart, give us a little context. Who made it?
So this is a movie. It's the first feature film to date, the only feature film directed by Daniels, as in the first name Daniel, plural. Its directors Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheiner. These are two guys who met at a 3D animation class at Emerson College, and they bonded over their own shared twisted sensibilities.
Which scans for this movie.
Oh, yeah. The New York Times describes Daniel Kwan's final school project was an animated short about an insomniac who undresses people while they sleep and does their laundry for them. Mr. Scheinert starred a dead boy whose body is piloted by small tigers.
So clearly we have the seeds of someone being dead.
Yeah. One of their shorts that I watched today is tremendous. You should check it out. It's called Dog Boarding. We can put a link in the description if people want to follow along.
Yeah.
But so that was 2011. They got into the Sundance Institute labs in the summer of 2014, which is where they developed Swiss Army Man. But so while they were at the Sundance lab, they were pitched a music video for a new dance track by Lil Jon and DJ Snake called Turn Down for What? They get the pitch, and let's see, this is Shiner. We were like, this is the stupidest song we've ever been sent. Let's pitch the stupidest video we've ever pitched.
That's not really the kind of thing that you want to say out loud about the artist you're working with, though. Like, obviously they did, and it didn't hurt anyone, but no. Here they are saying it's the dumbest song they've ever heard.
I don't know, maybe Lil Jon and DJ Snake were like, hey guys, we've got this stupid song, can you make a stupid video? Like, I don't know, maybe they're aware of what...
You think Lil Jon is that self-aware?
I don't know anything about Lil Jon, maybe he is self-aware, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't either. We should say here, in the Turn Down for Want video, it begins with a man dancing on a rooftop. I believe he is played by director Daniel Kwan himself, who gets an erection, leaps into the air when the song begins, and thrusts his erection down through the roof of this apartment building into the apartment below. And for the remainder of the video, his throbbing, gyrating erection inspires everyone in every cascading floor of this apartment building to also begin dancing wildly. So then they make this crazy ass oddball little movie, and they have its premiere at Sundance.
Holy shit. People are fucking like, very off-put, or they love it, I'm assuming.
Both. It won the Best Directing Prize at Sundance for a dramatic feature, and it was nominated for the Grand Jury Prize. But
Jesus Christ.
The movie was reportedly met with a ton of walkouts from its premiere screenings, but then was also met with a standing ovation at the end of which. And the two of them, the two Daniels, they were 28 and 29 years old at the time, which just makes me die a little bit inside. Just a little bit.
That's only 7 years younger than we are right now. We were in the same age range, but we were doing pretty unremarkable things, and they were getting the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance.
They got nominated for the Grand Jury Prize. They only won the still extremely prestigious Best Directing Prize at Sundance. Before we dig into the meat of the movie and the bones,
yeah.
The meat and the bones, I would like your thoughts on this here motion picture, because I'm sure that you had them.
Oh, so many thoughts. I love it.
It's a very Jamie movie.
It is. It has, for those of you who don't know me, I have a pretty morose sense of humor, and I like things that are irreverent, that don't think that things are holy, because I don't find anything to be holy.
Well, also, I think there is one thing that you do find holy.
What's that?
The inherent and intrinsic hilarity of farts.
Oh, God, yes. If you don't think that farts are funny, you are lying to yourself and the whole rest of the world.
In reading interviews about this movie, you may not be surprised, there is a lot of discussion of the farts, right?
Of course.
The Daniels were, one of them was saying in an interview that, like, a fart is the most honest sound that a human being can make. They told Rolling Stone, honestly, the only thing we were trying to do was start a movie with a fart joke and end the movie with a fart that makes you cry.
So to return to my thoughts on this movie.
About the farts.
About the movie, you shit.
All right. I thought it was about the farts.
I mean, I do love the farts. You know that I love the farts. But I think the movie is a whole lot of fun. It's very honest with itself and with its audience about what it is. It feels really disciplined the way information is doled out to you through the course of this movie. It takes until the very end for you to get a full picture of who Hank is.
Hank is the living human played by Paul Dano.
Yes. You know, where the movie is about Manny, Daniel Radcliffe, as a corpse trying to figure out what life is. That I think is the simplest version of what this movie is about.
Well, I would counter that Hank is trying to teach him what life is. And in the process, Hank ends up learning himself all the ways that he's been living incorrectly.
Yes, that is accurate.
He's like a really bad dad who, as he starts explaining like all of these lessons that he wants to impart, he's like, oh, shit. Maybe I shouldn't have said that out loud. And maybe I shouldn't have said that at all to you, you impressionable new soul.
It's funny that you bring up him being a dad, because I mentioned to you earlier that I have a bunch of themes written down, and that's sort of what I have to talk about this movie. And I think parenting is a big one.
Oh, for sure. It's a huge part of it, right? He is effectively like raising a new organism.
Because Manny doesn't know anything other than language, really.
Yeah, he has to learn about his body and what to do with it and what's appropriate and what actions are appropriate. And he has to learn about relationships and how you value yourself and how you interact with people.
And his only portal into the idea of relationships with other humans is this profoundly damaged and like depressed, like husk of a person.
Yeah. But so you're talking about thematic ideas, right? Parenting is not a theme. Parenting is a kernel of a theme. So what do you think the theme actually is? Like, what does the movie have to say about parenting?
That parents are by their nature imperfect, and that parenting is an imperfect process. Yes. And then your kid leaves, which is not an uncommon theme in literature, film, the human experience. Like, it's been explored, certainly not exactly this way.
If only there was some kind of classic quote or description of a recurring story, something about the biblical misdeeds of the male father figure but being revisited upon him by his male child, something like that.
I don't think it's a revisit of sins of the father, because Hank doesn't have his sins revisited upon him.
No, I don't think so either. You're right.
He fails spectacularly in parenting, and yet this movie can seem to be just a reflection of what I would call the sad white boy, the like privileged yet very depressed white male protagonist who...
He's alone and he's sad because he wants a girl, but he can't talk to the girl.
Exactly.
Manny is his manic pixie dream girl that comes into his life and turns everything around. Yeah, he is that guy, right?
He is.
The movie completely dismantled all of his like his sad white boy, like, pity me, look at my plight. But like the character feels it as well. We've talked about it without really engaging with it, but like this is a movie that is very interested in the body.
Fucking homie asks him, first of all, Paul Dano puts a cork into Daniel Radcliffe's asshole.
I wanted to ask about this. So you looked at the cork. What kind of cork do we think that is? Do we have any indicators?
Cork. That is 100% a champagne cork. Yeah, that's not a regular wine cork.
So this cork could be used in any bottled sparkling white wine, right?
That's correct.
Right, because champagne refers to any sparkling white wine.
I'll kill you. I will jump through the internet right now and strangle you to death.
But that would be the appropriate cork, because you need something that's able to really hold all that pressure back.
Yeah, I definitely had a good laugh that it was a sparkling wine cork.
Let me ask you. I think this is really important. We got to dig down on the verisimilitude of this very grounded, down to earth concept for a movie.
Yes.
And you spent some time in your scholarly years before you became a professional wino. Studying biology, right? So you know a little bit about anatomy and how the human body works. Is the human digestive tract and finally the human anus, is that able to produce comparable pressure that like a champagne bottle could produce that with the appropriate stimulation, this is sounding even grosser than the movie is,
so,
could
so
actually
gross.
Be expelled. Can the butt shoot out the cork? That's what I want to know.
I don't know what the internal pressure, what our limit for pressure in the anal region is. But I would imagine that it's something lower than the 6 atmospheres held back by champagne corks.
All right. That's something I can work with. So in my Googling, I got to add atmospheres to it. How many atmospheres can
the anal sphincter?
Oh, okay. There we go. The human anus? Oh, wait. Now, hang on. Second link. Reddit request. What is the maximum PSI that can be retained by the average human butthole? God bless you, Reddit.
Is there an answer?
Let's see. So according to Reddit user Sockalicious. Okay, you ready for this? I'm not sure I am. The Wikipedia article on anal beads states that most users enjoy anal beads with a diameter around 45 millimeters or so. I needed to know that in order to interpret this important abstract. Someone was wondering about this in 1972 and came up with a simple method suitable for routine use. Let's assume the anal verge encircles the sphere where an inscribed... I just want the... All right, so according to this person, 1.2 PSI? How does that... Can we convert PSI to atmospheres?
We can. I actually have a converter up here right
beautiful.
Now. 1.2 PSI is 0.0816552 atmospheres.
Okay.
So not even close.
Not even close. So the human butt... What about a dead butt? Does rigor mortis...
Rigor mortis stops after a certain point, and then the muscles all relax. So my understanding, and I'm a little rusty on my my anatomy and physiology, is that the farting happens when rigor mortis sets out, so to speak, and the
right, because that's when the sphincter
would relax.
Yeah.
So there would be no amount of pressure at all. It's a complete flight of fancy that a champagne cork could hold in his farts.
That might ruin the movie for me.
Really? That's the thing that'll ruin the movie for you? That being fantasy, not him being ridden like a jet ski or like being able to produce sparks with his fingers.
Those are all the good things.
Or the shotgun mouth. We could also probably find out how much pressure it would take being released to propel two human bodies across a body of water.
I mean, I'm less concerned with that because that, you know... That just seems reasonable to me. The way the movie presents it, it all feels totally plausible.
So I'm finished with this discussion now. Let's take a moment to appreciate one of the Swiss Army Man's functions, which is that when he gets an erection, it points them home.
That's right. He gets a field compass erection. Can I tell you a little bit about the boner?
Oh, please do.
In an interview with Vulture, Daniel Radcliffe said it went through several iterations. One of the pieces that I had on was just wooden. Wow, I can't believe I'm telling you this. It was like the end of a broom. It was all just like one line and it was too smooth. So that was the one note that I gave and they took it and ran with it. Daniel Kwan, a co-director, tells IndieWire, "We upped our boner game for Swiss Army Man. Turned down for what was just a broomstick with a hole in the back of his pants. There were no visual effects. And Swiss Army Man, we had an animatronic one built.
Wow.
It could point left and right."
Dear God.
There's so much of all of that. They include it because it's taboo, but it's also so much of what the movie is about. Like one of the other major like recurring thematic ideas in the movie is shame.
So much shame.
Don't talk about your erection. Don't talk about masturbating. I don't fart in front of other people. Why wouldn't you fart in front of me? Almost all of it is rooted in the body. And by the very last fart, the one that the director said they wanted to make us cry with, it's not funny anymore, and it's genuinely part of the emotional journey of both of these characters. Like, his major emotional catharsis of the movie is to fart practically, because he weaponizes his fart to get the cop to go away, but he farts and then he cops to it.
Yep.
He admits it. He is no longer ashamed of his farts. It's surprisingly profound.
And then I loved it the first time I watched it, and then the second time I watched it, I loved it even more. The knowing and congratulatory nod that he gets from his father after farting.
From the fart. I forgot about that.
It's so good. Oh my God. Like, there's no way that his father possibly understands the emotional importance of what is going on.
No. No.
He gets the, like, thumbs up from his dad, like, you go, boy.
You did it. You cut that cheese.
Fart all over that cop.
Yeah.
And then the bear scene as a whole.
The bear scene starts with one of my favorite, like, visual moments in the whole movie. The coordinated movements of Hank posing Manny to get him to start farting on the kindling for a campfire, and then pivots him around perfectly and gracefully so that it's this one fluid motion to get Manny to expel the gas and then light his own fart. It's one of the things that movies can do that most other mediums cannot replicate, which is the idea of visual beauty in motion.
Yeah.
Like, even in something as silly and as dumb as this, watching them move together and work together, there is a choreography and there is a grace and there's a synthesis to it. Like, they, at times, they become like one being.
And this technique gets deployed at what is the emotional climax of this movie.
Right.
This is the moment that Hank, Paul Dano, has realized that he has to reveal to Manny that the phone is not Manny's and that Mary Elizabeth Winstead is not a person that either of them know. Like, as he's revealing it, you realize that there is a bear. which Daniel Radcliffe describes as a big raccoon eating their food.
Yeah.
But then, like, right after that, Daniel Radcliffe cries for the first time. He experiences what crying is, and you watch him, like, is this crying? I hate it. It's uncomfortable.
I want to talk about the bear, but then we got to talk about Radcliffe.
His performance, oh my God. All right, so what do you want to talk about the bear?
It's a real bear. The Daniels asked the owner of, quote, one of the best animatronic bears in the country if they could use it in Swiss Army Man. And the person wrote back and said, it'll cost $100,000. And they wrote back because they're on a comparatively low budget. We asked if he could cut us a deal, and he said, I read the script, didn't like the poop stuff. I think I'll stick with commercials. So they ended up just having to hire a real bear instead of using the supposedly great animatronic one. And it looks amazing in the scene. But so Radcliffe. Daniel Radcliffe. Harry Potter. I thought he was good in those Potter movies. I thought he was fine in some of the other things I've seen him in. I had no idea he could do something like this.
The physical acting necessary for this that you got no glimpse of at all in Harry Potter.
Like, it is an astounding transformation. And every time you watch him where Manny gets to a new level, like, let's say, emotionally or developmentally, where he's able to smile for the first time. The first time that he moves his body, I think it's during the bear scene, where Radcliffe is reanimating Manny's corpse by pushing it back first up the side of a tree, is the staggering thing to look at because you completely believe it. The closest thing I can think to compare it to is the big scene in Wolf of Wall Street where DiCaprio has taken the super lewds and they finally kicked in.
Yeah.
And there's that amazing one shot of him dragging his body across like a hotel parking area and then trying to get into the driver's seat of a Lambo. Like, I think it's as good as that, if not better. And he does it over a whole fucking feature. Like, it is an unbelievable technical accomplishment.
He fucking nailed it. Not only does he look dead, but he also manages to make you believe that he has this, like, childlike wonder about him and that he has real emotions to express.
Yeah, I think it's one of my favorite performances in any movie in, like, of that decade. It's such, and it's so funny. And it's so empathetic and emotional. Like, I'm just in awe of it. And I want somebody to give him another part like that because I got to see what else he could do.
I think that this movie, not unlike this wine, is kind of a hard sell. You give a plot synopsis.
Yeah, you've alienated 95% of people listening to you.
Exactly. And you tell someone what this wine is and you say the word Pella Verga and it's from Verduno and already their eyes are glazing over. And yet, put this in someone's glass and put this movie in front of the eyes of someone. And I don't think that there are a lot of people who could honestly reject either. I'm using the word honestly pointedly. You're going to hit me for painting with a really fucking broad brush here, but I'm going to go ahead and paint with that broad brush. Like,
well, then I don't need to hit you with it. That's great. Go ahead. Paint with that brush.
If you're rejecting this movie because of like the toilet humor and the masturbation or whatever, then you're completely missing the point.
Yeah.
And you're not engaging with it honestly on its own terms.
It's a buddy survival adventure comedy that happens to have all this other stuff on top. And I'm not saying it's conventional by any means. I don't know. Like, I feel like I could recommend this to anybody. I feel like anyone listening to this podcast right now has already enjoyed or will soon enjoy Swiss Army Man. Like, that was my seat squeaking. That was not a fart, by the way.
It was the good fart.
Faux leather on this chair. Here, let's give it another try.
Oh, yeah. Right. There it is. Not as good as the fart noises in this movie, but like, I totally agree with you. Top tier fart noises.
Do you feel successful about the pairing?
I do. I think that this wine pairs extraordinarily well with this movie. I think that the surface level thing that I just brought up is sort of ancillary, but kind of a fun parallel that on the surface you could dismiss either the movie or the wine just based on like misunderstanding. But also the movie is really sweet and there's a lot to think about, but also just very enjoyable because it's funny and these guys that are on screen are super likable. And by the same token, the wine is, there's a lot to think about. It has aromatic complexity. It has a depth to it, but it's just likable because it's fruit driven and high toned and sort of makes you want to eat. I think that it's a great pair personally.
Well, for my part,
yeah,
I think while my message of come to this movie openly and as you say, honestly, and accept it for what it is, and don't let your own taboos and biases put you off from what might be off-putting content on the surface. Well, I can say that about the movie. I continue to not particularly enjoy this wine, although I see what you're going for. Like, intellectually, I see what you're going for. The part of this that is off-putting is not something I can ignore or justify in the way that I can ignore or just enjoy the ostensibly off-putting parts of Swiss Army Man.
That's fair.
So I think it's an accurate pairing, but I wish you'd found something that other people would have found objectionable in a wine, but that I would have actually embraced and patted myself on the back for embracing.
Well said.
Jamie, any final thoughts?
This was a great episode. I had a great time doing it, except for all the parts where Scott was talking.
This was an okay episode, and I would have had a better time doing it if Jamie didn't talk so much about wine.
Deuces, y'all.
Actually, I have a better quote from Swiss Army Man to end the episode with, which really feels like it could be a summation of at least 50% of this podcast, which is after Hank has explained to Manny what Netflix is. Manny has this long pause and he says, "I have a lot of questions about all the things you just said."
Yep.
All right. Good night, Jamie. Good night, Podcast Land.
We love y'all. Tune in next time.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Please follow us on the socials at Bigger Bottle Pod. Email us should you have any questions, concerns, comments, whatever, at biggerbottlepod@gmail.com. Make sure you rate, review, and follow the show wherever you get your podcasts, and tell a friend.
This episode was produced and edited by Scott Hudson. That is me. Our social media presence is thanks to Jamie Harrison Rubin. That is him sitting right across from me. Our new art that you're all enjoying on your little thumbnails on your podcatchers is the work of Ross Kennard. Thank you very much, Ross.
Danke, Ross. We love you. Remember, everyone, drink more wine and watch more movies. It's good for you. We promise.
And go see movies in theaters, everybody, because they're great and we love them.
Yes, correct. It's a good experience. Do that thing.
Yes. Where you can do it safely. I should have put that up front. It's too late now.
All right, goodbye.